everybody here. My name is Justin Ebersole. I have been involved in graphic design for close to 15 years. I originally started working for Rosewood, if any of you folks know Rosewood, many years ago. And then we moved to Honduras, and we lived in Honduras for 10 years. And we just moved back 9 months ago. But I've been doing graphic design and layout and themes and colors and styles and fonts, and are all things that I really enjoy. And so the discussion workshop this afternoon, I have, I think, 47 slides. So I don't know if we're going to get everything covered. And if I don't get everything covered, we'll just have to come back and pick it up tomorrow. Well, tomorrow's topic is something different. But is there a way to close these lights down a little bit? Or I don't know if you can turn them off. I guess there's no other way just to... Okay, well, that's fine. We can work our way through this. I did want to ask one question. How many of you are employed graphic designers? That is what you do for a job. Okay, we have a handful. What brings the rest of y'all here? What do we want to discover? Well, what we want to discover, and why don't we go ahead and turn it off the lights, if you can read it, because you can open the door if necessary. Choosing a style to fit your purpose. I think it's Ecclesiastes that says, there is never an end of making of books. And man's ideas are constantly changing, and we are constantly putting out. So how do we capture, how do we get people's attention? How do we present information in such a way that it sticks? So you have a great idea. You have a wonderful story, that an experience that you want to share with others. Or someone comes to you and says, I have this great thing that I want to put out there. What do you think? Couple of questions here. Have you ever picked up a book because of its cover? Have you ever looked at an ad and felt compelled to pursue it? Have you ever been browsing a magazine and simply said, well, that looks really nice? Have you used an instruction manual and everything just made sense, even though it was a complicated process? And another instruction manual you picked up and you thought it should be easy and it was very complicated. Why is that? What makes that happen? As we move into design, excellent design is all about defined purpose. You need to understand why you are doing what you're doing to get your desired result. So I kind of have the topic today, the workshop today, divided into two sections. The first section, we're going to talk about purpose. We're going to talk about why do we do what we're doing. Because it is an understanding the purpose that then will impact how we follow the design, the colors we choose, the fonts we choose, the layout, the type of material, the type of book, the type of, you name it. So the first thing we're going to talk about is, why do we do what we do? First of all, why am I producing this? If this is your project, because there are thousands of others out there, why do I feel compelled to do it myself? What do I intend to communicate? How do I want to captivate? Where do I want to take them? And how do I want them to feel? And what do I want them to do when I'm finished? As you think through all of the reasons of why am I doing this publication, why am I doing this story, why am I doing this, it needs to have a goal in mind. I want to produce this story because it showed how God did a tremendous miracle in my life. I want to change somebody else's life, the heartache of seeing somebody else go through a difficult situation. And you want to put the story out there so that they don't have to repeat the same problem.
Okay, where do I want to take them? How do I want them to feel? Yes, in the words of the story, in the words of the publication, you can control emotion through the storyline. But you can support all of that with your graphics and your styles. Or you can destroy your story with your graphics and your styles. Or the lack of graphics and styles. So that leads me to say, good design cannot improve poor content. In other words, unless you have a compelling piece to deliver, putting a fancy cover on it isn't really going to make the difference. Is it going to change that? You say, well, I'm just a hired graphic designer. That happens. We get hired for a lot of different companies, for a lot of different things. Of all things, I've spent the last 2.5 months building a puppy website. Somebody who wants to sell puppies. They're $4,000 or $5,000 dogs. Not that really that big of a deal to me, but it is a big deal to my customer. And so we wanted to do it right. Okay? The purpose of where we want to end up will affect the choices. Okay? Secondly, after I've defined this is the reason why I want to do this, I recommend we think about who are we looking at? Who is the audience? Who is it for? Is it children? Is it school age? Is it adults? Is it people in another country? What age group? Are they to be informed, entertained, or convinced? I have three different trains of thought here. Informed is the idea of educating. You're giving them information. Entertained, simply passing the time. It's a leisure. And last of all, convinced. Are you there to try to change their mind, to change what they're thinking? The graphics you choose, the artist work that you go down to change somebody's mind will be different than if you're simply to entertain somebody. What mood are they in? What are they doing? Do you need to change that? And lastly, a point to consider, what unique factor may that group of person be facing than different? So let's say you're doing a graphic design for somebody who's specifically in an abused household of, say, substance abuse, drug abuse, or something, and your publication is targeted toward that type of people. Or your audience is someone who is a third world country, and they come from households where there's not enough to eat. How will that impact your design choices? How will that impact the way you present it? And so that leads me to this saying, understanding your audience will impact the styles chosen to effectively communicate. To really get in front of them and say, you know what? I really want you to take this with you. Lastly, on the purpose is consider the desired results. Where do you want them to do? When you're all done, and your book or your publication is out there. In my work, it's somewhat easy because the work we do for most people is we want people to call the company and buy the product. We want them to call the company and start the service. And so we measure very rigorously, if we can, how effective was that ad? How effective was that brochure? How effective was that website? And we want to know if it made a difference or not. If it didn't make a difference, why didn't it? What do we need to improve? Oh, I was going to fix this. This all have to come in by hand here. When quality content meets a defined audience, it produces a desired action. But there's more. In other words, so we've looked at the principle, looked at the purpose of what we're after. We looked at our audience, and this is what we want to have done. So just because we have great content doesn't mean the work is done. And this leads into the second half. And I kind of went over this first part rapidly because the second half is where I really want to spend the time. But I do want to say this. If there's any comments or thoughts or questions, feel free to raise your hand. I realize that with the presentation, I am kind of more of a dictator up here commandeering the conversation one-sidedly. But if you have any thoughts or questions, feel free to ask. So I guess this would be a nice place to make a break. On discovering purpose. Any thoughts or questions or comments on the purpose of publication? So, while understanding your audience and having quality content, the delivery of that content will affect its impact on the intended audience. So you may have a good manuscript, you may have a good product, you may have a great motivational quote, but unless it's presented in a careful way, it will not have its desired results, or its desired results could be greatly diminished. And that's what I want to move into next, and that is, again, I repeat this phrase, excellent design is all about defined purpose. In other words, as you define your purpose, then you can have excellent design. And good design comes out of having purpose. And so the two go hand in hand. And so I have found in my work that the more time when I'm beginning a project, when I'm starting to work for a new client, the more I can understand what they're after, who they serve, their goals as a company, as an individual, and I can kind of put myself in their little world and then approach them as if I was their customer, helps me better understand how should that content be delivered. That's kind of a mouthful. It is. It is kind of large to walk that whole process through. But as you deliberately take those steps, the results are much more effective and you have much less time of, oh, I misunderstood you. Oh, I didn't really. And you have that breakdown. So what makes excellent design? Since early mankind, writing and graphics have been a part of man's communication. Just as God has created laws in nature, science and math around us, there are laws in design and layout. It is true that the laws of design are more abstract and not as easily noticed. However, when man tries to break them, the laws of design, and create modern art, it becomes confusing and diminished. Understanding design principles can help us better communicate, and we've all seen these. You go into these modern art studios and they have this paint splash. I've never gone into one, but you see pictures of them. They have this paint splashed across the corner and it's supposed to represent somebody, I don't know what. You know what I'm talking about. It's this grunge art, this, I don't know if it comes from psychedelic drugs or what, but you know, you get this whole self-expression. And in reality, it's actually a rejection of the laws of order and design that God has set up. The laws of what I call the classic art, the classic design. You look at the type of art that we as God's children appreciate, the type of artwork that comes out of the art department here, many of the books that we see. So just as a craftsman carves his wood, or as a potter shapes his clay, so must a layout artist craft his presentation. So what are the elements that make up styles? What are the elements, what are the ingredients? Just as a chef knows how to pull a little bit of this spice, a little bit of that flavor, and a little bit of that spice that I had no idea existed to craft a delectable meal, or as a woodworker takes his tools and his sander and his carving knife and his stains and his finishes and produces a beautiful piece of furniture, so does the graphic designer. The graphic designer does it with four basic elements. Number one is, I guess in any order, but I have them in this order, is color. And I love color because I am a graphic designer, I guess. But color is my favorite tool of communication. With color, we have typography. And in typography, simply fonts and letters, we can communicate a whole different feeling, a whole different mood on our paper. Next, we have shapes and symbols. Shapes and symbols would go right along with color because most shapes and symbols have color. And lastly, we have, of course, photos and textures. as a graphic artist, takes these four basic categories and blends them together with excellent content, he can craft an excellent work of art, a writing or whatever he's producing. So we're gonna take a look at each one of these individually, these four sections, and analyze what they can do for us. So first off is color. Color is an amazing tool to communicate a wide variety of emotions and feelings. And the reason why I asked how many are graphic designers here or not, because color is a subject that, put it this way, it's a large field that can be explored. Just like music is a wide field. Color and what color is in relation to each other and the feelings that they draw out of people. And the other thing that's interesting about color is color does have a little bit of difference in world culture. Some things being different. One of the biggest things, if you're in finance, in America, a green number means, like if you're in the markets, in the stock market or trading, a green number in America means that it's positive. And it's red if it's negative for the day. Well, in China, that's reversed. It's red if it's positive, because in China, red means good luck or means good blessing. And green is when it's negative. So that's an interesting little difference. But colors are a lot of fun. And so we have our primary colors. We have secondary colors, tertiary colors. We have complementary colors, triadic colors, tetradic colors. And these are all colors that if you pick one, then you have the two or three corresponding. Of course, primary colors being, depending if you work with RGB, red, green, and blue, or if you work with CMYK and pigments and coloring, cyan, magenta, yellow, and black. That is the whole avenues of color. I decided I'm going to simply mention this at the beginning, the whole thing of these color and complementary colors and all of that, because that is a very fascinating study. But that is not the avenue we're going to go down. We're going to go down more the avenue of what are the feelings, what are the associations that we as Western people associate with colors. So when you see a red fire engine, what do you think of? When you see a green red light, when you see a red light turn green, what do you think of? We're going to go down more that avenue of colors. So bear with me as we go through some very bright screens and some very bright colors. Red. Red is the color of passion and drama. This color attracts the most attention and is associated with strong emotions such as love and anger. Red is universally used to signify danger, courage, strength, and power. Red is stimulating, vibrant, and exciting, and inspires desire. And across the bottom, and pardon my projector, I thought that would probably happen, but the different shades that I use around the bottom. This does come from a website called Graphics. A lot of very valuable information. They actually have posters with this same information that you can buy from them, that you can hang on your wall. Very, very excellent information. But when we talk about red, and we talk about fire engines, and we talk about warning signs, and we think about stop signs, we all get that sense of urgency in our heads. But when I talk about red, and I talk about Valentine's Day, and I talk about red hearts, and I talk about, and of course we don't use this, but red lipstick, and I talk about those things, you understand the feeling that I'm drawing out, that the pictures that are coming to you in your mind. That's what red does. Red is a color that if you want attention, you use it. You grab them. But if you overdo red, here I am going without my notes. There's something here I wanted to mention about red that I didn't have room to put it on my screen there. Red is also feelings of aggression and visual strain. The longer you look at that, the more tired your eyes come. But red is also unique, and that is the color you can use when viewing the stars at night, because it does not destroy your ability to see. So that's why they often have red lamps for people who are stargazers. They can look in their telescope and use a little red flashlight and read their text without their eyes having to majorly readjust. A caution on using red heavily in text, especially on screens, because red is the most common colorblind color. So if you use red text on screens, colorblind people have a harder time seeing it. Moving on to orange, a more pleasant color. The color of orange is encouragement. The combination of yellow and red makes orange convey excitement, warmth, and enthusiasm. Social and inviting. This is the color of the extrovert, exuding happiness and joy, releasing inhibitions. Orange is a motivating and encouraging color that appeals to young people. I found it interesting that they took yellow, which is the color we're going to see next. You take yellow and red and put them together, and of course you have orange, and you kind of have the mix, you kind of have the halfway feeling, because yellow, and we're going to get to that in just a moment, yellow takes you down a different feeling. Yellow takes you down the line of more relaxation, of happiness, of energy, of sunshine, because sunshine is yellow. Orange is halfway in between. So the emotions, and over here on the, I don't know if you can see that, up here in the top corner, I have the emotions listed of orange tends to be the optimist, independent, adventurous, creative, and fun, used to stimulate, express fun, draw attention, and freedom, and often used in the art and entertainment, sports, and transportation industry. Is the color orange. Yellow. Yellow is the color of optimism. Compelling color that conveys youthful and fresh energy. This is the color of sunshine, is uplifting, illuminating, and associated with success and confidence. Yellow stimulates the left side of the brain, helping with clear thinking and quick decision making. Turn the lights on when you want to focus. You want to think this through. The emotions associated is enthusiasm, opportunity, spontaneity, happiness, positivity. And of course, the different colors across the bottom. My poor banana color and eggnog kind of disappeared there. But yellow is a fun color. But the downside of yellow is it can be a sign of cowardice, a sign of wearing out quickly, because it's a weak color. It's not a strong color. Yellow is often lost on the printed page. In print, yellow is more difficult and can end up looking cheap. So yellow we often use as accents, as a gold line, as a stroke. We like to use gold, yellowish gold in those situations. Next up is pink. Pink, the color of sensitivity. The passion of red combined with the purity of white create this color associated with love, tranquility, and femininity. Pink has associations with tenderness and nurturing while conveying a sense of safety and even vulnerability. I find this quite interesting as well, of how pink takes the emotional, the pleasant side of red and tones it down. And of course we think about that, baby products, women products most often go down, maybe I should say more like children's products. A lot of them use pink heavily in their advertising. If you're after that baby, that newborn, that young toddler, you know, that's the audience that you're after. Pink will be, the colors that you go after. Emotion evoked of compassion, love. Playful and admiration. Come back to immature. Pink is also interesting because when pink is overdone, it gives an immature look. It gives a cheap look. So pink you have to be careful with and that you don't overdo it. You ever talk about people wearing pink colored glasses? Somebody who's overly optimistic about a situation. That's everything is rosy. Everything is pink. Association with pink. Blue. Interestingly enough, blue is the world's most popular color. If you ask, according to surveys, people say, you know, what color do you like the best? Blue is the color that wins out. And rightly so, blue is the color of trust, the shade of the sea and the sky. It is thought to induce calm and convey tranquility, serenity, and peace. The popular color instills confidence and inspires feelings of trust, loyalty, integrity, and responsibility. Cool blue is conservative and can also be perceived as aloof. Another interesting thing to note is blue is never used, I shouldn't say never, but rarely used in food products. Why? How many natural foods are blue in nature? Very few. Blue is more associated with molds and funguses. And so blue tends to be in the nature, in nature tends to be rejected. But again, trust, responsibility, honesty, loyalty, inner security, used to reduce stress, calmness, relax, and secure. Often used in security, finance, and technology industries is where you will find the color blue used as a primary color in their styles. Next up is green, the color of growth and health. Think of nature and see green in all its glory, expressing renewal and life. Springtime, everything turns green again. Green has a strong association as refreshing and peaceful color. It evokes feeling of abundance and a plentiful environment while providing a restful and secure feeling. I find that interesting because I for myself personally, I'm more of a blue and a burgundy fellow. Green is not one that I would go after, but in reading and studying about this, I could understand how green is that. The emotions brought out of safety, harmony, stability, reliability, balance, nature, natural colors. Violet. Violet is the color with spiritual overtones. The energy of red with the calm of blue combine to create violet, a color that inspires reflection and self-awareness. It is the color of the sensitive, compassionate, intuitive soul, the introvert. Also, violet has long been associated with royalty and characteristics of quality and luxury. Again, very interesting color. Emotions of imagination, spirituality, compassion, sensitivity, mystery, used to create, inspire creativity, wisdom, and luxury. And it also comes out with the spiritual side of it. I wouldn't have necessarily tied that, but I did get thinking about it, how often, you know, at time of Easter, lavender is a very common color over Easter. And that's probably where that comes together. The color of brown, the color of the earth, stability and a solid foundation is the message that emanates. This color relates to things that are natural and simple. Brown is thought to be dull, but is reliable and wholesome. Although frugal and stingy, brown is a color of safety and quiet confidence, warming and reassuring. How many people have brown as their favorite color? Very few. Not many, but there are some. You know, it's the kind of thing that brown is the kind of puts you at ease. Nothing major is going to happen. We're steady. We're calm. We're keeping on going. Back to earth, back to nature, you know, the whole green push in society the last couple of years. But that's brown. Brown brings that sense of it's going to be okay. Gray, the color of compromise. Gray is considered to be an unemotional, detached color, seeking to avoid attention. Conveys gloom and depression. Very conservative, gray has stabilizing effect and is very neutral. But can also conjure up feelings of frustration. Gray is linked with maturity, protection, and reliability. Basically here, when I put together, you know, color schemes, whenever I'm doing a design for something, invariably gray will show up somewhere because it's an excellent complementary color. It can go with anything. And so you're looking for an extra splash to go across the corner. You're looking for an extra little design element. You want it to just simply dress it up but not take attention. Gray is an excellent
Could it be that gray would also bring out the vibrancy of the other colors that they're beside it?
Good thought. Yes, I would assume so. Provides as a comparison to others, other colors. Black. Now you will notice the background here, the three different blacks in the main large area. And I want to talk about that in a moment. But black, the color of mystery. Black is actually the lack of color in society. In light, black is the absence of color. In printing, black is the presence of all pigments. So it's reversed, but graphic designers, it's an important thing that we understand that. It covers, it hides, and implies that there's a barrier. A strong and powerful color, black is formal and sophisticated and secretive. It is the color of things that are scary and evil. Black conveys pessimism and the lack of hope, yet also of total power and control. Think of dictatorship, complete control. If you're behind black, you're scared of it. If you're with black, you've got all power. Very powerful color. Used to hide feelings, to intimidate, fear, mystery. And all we have to do is think about Halloween and how many black things come out over Halloween. It's association with wickedness. And of course, the last color, but perhaps the most important, is white. White is associated with light, goodness, innocence, purity, and virginity. It is considered to be the color of perfection. White means safety, purity, and cleanliness. As opposed to black, white has a positive connotation. White can represent a successful beginning. In heraldry, it depicts faith and purity. I'm going to back up to that black. I said I was going to talk about it. I probably forgot. What is the difference between the top black and the bottom black? It's very subtle, but what is the difference? The black that is... Where's my pointer again? Up here, this black across the top, and this black across the bottom. And then compared with the black in the middle.
The bottom one's a cooler black.
Exactly. The bottom one is a cooler black. This is a what? A warmer black. Very important concept to understand in graphic design and also in printing is if you want to do a warm black, okay, in printing, you set your, to get a cold black, which is this one, you do a color bill, and I typically do in CMYK, 60, 50, 40, and CMYK with the cyan being 50 to give the cool, and of course black is at 100. This one is reversed, where the yellow has the higher number and blue has the lower one, and it creates a warmer black. You say, well, why is that important to understand it? Whenever you're using black in a layout, and you want it to give a warm black because there's a nice full-color photograph right beside it, you go with a warm black because it helps to present a nice warm feeling. You want a genuine jet black, you go with a cool black because it prints on paper a very dark black. The one in the middle is simply 100K, where we have just the black ink and that's not, and nothing else. In graphic design, that is actually a no-no because you get a very weak black. You get almost a gray look. So that's just a side tidbit for you graphic designers. You probably knew that already, but to me, that was something early on that after I understood that, blacks in design made a lot more sense to me. Also, whenever you're color grading photos, if you want a cool looking photo, go find your blackest point, see how high your blue is compared to your yellow. If you want a warm looking photo, go to your blackest point, go to your black point on your image and see where it comes out at. Very, very important. So last of all, on colors, understanding colors allows us to choose primary theme colors and build around them with complementary colors. And so understanding all that about colors, and my audience is a child in about first to third grade, and I simply want to entertain them. I simply want them to have a good storybook. What type of colors would you choose? Would you go black and brown and bright red?
Maybe red to get their attention, but hardly black because that's going to be pushing them away. Brown, maybe, but what about the vibrant colors? What about yellow and blue and green? And of course, we have this across the bottom here, a playroom. You know, that color provides energy. It's childish. Would I host a banker in that room? No, you know, that's not banking theme. But what about this one? This is an old world, an antique. You have your gray, this is actually a silver here, your darker gray, your more copper tones, your yellow, the antique color. If I said old world, if I said antique, what thoughts would you have? It would be this color. And so, understanding colors and understanding your audience and putting together a palette of colors to use in your publication is one of the very first steps that you need to do, and then staying consistent to those colors as you go along your project. Not saying the colors won't shift, but I have found that as I stay consistent to the colors I've chosen, early on provides a consistency throughout the project. This is especially important if you're doing a book, a textbook, or a work that spans multiple volumes where you want to keep a similar feel. In the graphic design industry, we do it whenever we talk about a business's brand. We want that same yellow, that same red, to always be the same on every ad, on every brochure, on the website, because this is that company, okay? Those colors make that theme. Those colors make that feel. Well, that's color. Any comments or thoughts on color before we move into typography? Typography is the art of communication through fonts and typefaces. Why is typography important? Well, number one, typefaces serve as the primary means we communicate. Legibility and clarity is paramount in our styles if we are to educate. If you want the people to get the message, they have to be able to read it. Okay? So you've got to put it in such a way they can read it. The secondary role of a font family is to set the tone or the mood of your style. If you go straight fonts, what feeling do you get? If you go fancy, curlicue fonts, what feeling do you get? Lastly, fonts can be used as accents and artistic touches in fine art, such as calligraphy is a font art. Calligraphy is a very, is an interesting art that intrigued me. I never was very good at it, but when I got to do calligraphy in Illustrator, that was a lot more fun. I could take somebody else's work and mess it all around and make my own. So, what do fonts communicate? Consider the following font styles and the word associated with it. And this set of fonts is tradition, is serif font. Serif simply means the little tails on the font. So when they talk about a font that is serif fonts, it means they have these little tails on the end of the letters. Sans serif is where they're all straight like the font across the top. Traditional font. A font like Times New Roman carries much tradition. Respectable. Trajan, well known for its titles. I personally feel Trajan is way overdone. But Trajan is considered a very elegant font. Just a slight serif on it with nice curved lines and letters. Trajan is well known for its titles. Reliable. Subtle nuances in Baskerville, which is this is a Baskerville font, make this a delightful choice for easy readability in text body. There's a number of them of kind of in that family, the Times New Roman, the Baskerville, the Adobe Garamond, Century School Book. Some of those are all fonts that even Georgia, I guess the next one I have, Comfort. Georgia Italic makes a comfort feel in short phrases or titles. Again, a very smooth feel comes with the fonts. And lastly, I have another one here, Typewriter. Easy to read with a flair of yesteryear technology. These would all be considered serif fonts. And serif fonts typically tend to be easier to read on printed page. But the feeling that a font gives, if your whole page was this font, would it be easy to read? No. Caps, capital letters, indicate shouting in tech world. If you send somebody an email or a text message and you capitalize all the letters, they take it, you're shouting at them. It is more difficult to read. So, moving on to the next one, sans serif fonts, and these are fonts without the little lines. I call them the serif fonts cousins. Stability. Clean, stable lines have given Helvetica its identity. Helvetica is probably the world's most commonly used font in signage. I don't know if it is or not, but it is up there. And rightfully so. It is easy to read at a distance, always there in a very defined way. Objective. Franklin Gothic gives somewhat a sober yet open and clear feel. Century Gothic has a modern flavor in this crisp font family. And again, these are all fonts that are kind of, they all kind of fit together. I find whenever I'm doing a layout, finding that right font for a title or a certain caption somewhere can almost be the most difficult part of the project, because I don't quite like the way that R wraps around the bottom. They didn't quite do that right. Or I don't quite like how that tail on the S. And so you're like, the rest of the font, so like, do I do the work of doctoring it the way I want it, or you designers know very well how that is. Modern flavors to serif and sans serif fonts, such as Futura. Futura has straight lines, sharp, pointy corners, give a very sharp feel to Futura. Progressive feeling font, big round circles, yet very concise I and R. Progressive font is Avant-Garde. Stylish font, Didot, italic, brings class and upscale theme to any style. You want a higher class feeling, Didot is a very interesting font to look at. Schoolbook, Old Faithful for children's textbooks, century schoolbook, easy to read. Classy tradition. Combine the tradition of serif with the modern style in big cast line. So these are all different fonts of more the traditional oriented. Well, what about the character fonts? And here we move into scripts and handwritten. They give that sense of elegance and grace. You have to be careful with these fonts. Often new first-timers or new graphic designers, we get enamored by these fancy fonts. They're fun to use. You know, they're like, wow, that's amazing. And, well, how easy is that, other than it being small, how easy is that to read? It gets very old. But a font like Bickham script has been around for years. I'm thinking that even like the menus on like the Titanic and things like that were in the Bickham script font. But that style of font have been around for years. Of course, we have the creative. Loops and rounds for the creative juices to flow. Great Vibes is that font, but there's a lot of them out there. Just loopy and they're great for a single word, an attention grabber, but don't try to lay out an article using a font like this. It's just not going to work. Of course, then we have personalized fonts. A fat brush pen with a handwritten freedom in relation. Relation is the name of that font. Where you have kind of that personal feel. Great for if you want to have a greeting card and you want to print out the you know, print 500 of them and print the inside in a font like this. And lastly, we have, of course, playful fonts. More difficult to read. Legibility is an issue with these, but that's not the point. The point is I want their attention and I want to have fun while I'm getting it. And of course, lastly, Old World, Canterbury, friendly font, big, fat, bold, round circles, amusing fonts. Informal, Tecton Pro is a favorite of mine to bring a little bit of class. and of course, an antique-looking font. So, to recap about fonts are a lot of fun. And typography is an art in and of itself. Go draw your own font. That's a lot of fun. It's an exercise that is very difficult. But understanding how the different points and the flares and the curves of the R and the S and those things play a role in perceiving the style of your art, the style of what you're doing. Fonts, care should be given, the last point here, care should be given in combining, complementing fonts to create an attractive style. And why I say that is if you take two script fonts, separate script, but you put them side by side, they clash because they're both in the script family. But if you take a script font and put it with a sans serif font, the script is the opening word, enjoy in a nice scripty way, and then the day to day in a nice, easy to read font. Those two go together, they complement each other. Using those type of styles in graphic design in your typography is excellent. Moving on, the next part I'm going to talk about is shapes and symbols. We have three basic types of shapes. We have geometric shapes, we have natural shapes, and we have abstract shapes, which would be symbols. So first of all, in shapes, talk about circles. Circles have no beginning or end. Simply, they go on and on and on and on. They suggest familiar objects such as wheels and balls and many kinds of fruit, well-roundedness and completeness. They bring a sense of airiness, a sense of bubbles. And so using circles is kind of an accent. You can hardly see them in my thing here, but you know, using circles, this dotted line of circles, this curve, circles across the bottom, they bring a real airy feel to it. They bring this type of theme into your design. A children's book, a happy-go-lucky storybook, an ad where you want somebody to smile. Circles do well in that. Squares and rectangles, they're stable, trusted, honesty. Right angles, they represent order, mathematics, rationality, formality. They are seen as earthbound. Of course, have examples of it here. Lines, straight lines, right angles, stability. Not much room to give. You'll see a lot of this used in corporate documents. A straight line across a lot of the Microsoft Word templates and things like that. You know, they have nice straight lines. They're uniform. They're universal. You can apply them quite a few places. And again, little accents, squares, give a little character to it, turn them on their side. Very interesting shapes and rectangles. Text is a lot, and if you notice on this one here, I arranged my text in fully justified. Makes perfect square. Again, another form of rectangles. Next, geometric shapes, simply any polygon. From triangles to octagons, more than can be used to bring meaning to style. Common shapes can be used to add abstract character and provide them the theme to a style. Anyway, quite interesting. There's a little paragraph that I put in there about triangles and the triangle's relation to spirituality, the Trinity, the three head, the three being Godhead. So that is geometric shapes. Next, we have natural shapes. Natural shapes are shapes of illustrations, colors. They tend to be pleasing and comforting. While they can be man-made ink blobs, they tend to represent shapes such as nature, leaves, rocks, clouds, etc. We use these heavily in illustrations for children's books, for diagrams, for owner's manuals, shapes where we can't necessarily show a photo for the real thing. We'll do diagrams. And then we have abstract shapes, also known as symbols. Universally, this symbol is known as nuclear trouble. There's nuclear danger. Lightning bolt. There's electricity. And then we also have shapes that we like to use as artistic shapes, simply as incidentals to dress up and provide breaks in our pages. And so using these shapes add character, adds a sense of personality to your artwork. And lastly, talk about his textures and photos. I can hardly see it again with the projector, but I have a texture here in the background, a wood texture. It brings a sense that this could be a woodworker's magazine or something that you want to feel the nature of wood. Photos are worth 1,000 words. Excellent imagery can complement a design style. Two different photos here. The top one, power and fear, love, a thunderstorm. Bottom one, peace and tranquility. Photos probably, if done right, can do way much more. I mean, more than probably can. That's why we like to do full color photos on our covers, because they provide so much imagery that we can't bring in with other elements. So we have the four main ingredients. We have colors, we have typography, we have shapes, and we have photos. How do we put that all together? How do we bring all of that together? A number of years ago, I was approached by a printing place, and this was a very similar cover they had for their social studies book. They said, "Can you help us on our cover?" What's wrong with it? Don't you like it? What if you were third grade in school, wouldn't you just love to get that book out and open it up?
I'm gonna yell in too.
Right. Well, for one, what emotion is this animal, baboon or whatever it is, what's it communicating? What's the color behind it communicating? Fear, intimidation. I'm going to get you. Probably the person who put it on there said, exciting and fun. And we want their attention. When I saw the cover, I said, yeah, I can understand why you want some help. Because this does not connect with a third grader in my mind. So what did we do? We actually don't even have a copy of it here. We spent quite a while, and we came up with we actually went with a green cover and had a number of other ones, a number of photos and things like that. So thinking those things through and bringing them all together, if I asked you, in your mind, if I said old world and antique, what kind of an image comes to your mind? What are colors of old world and antique that you think of? What are fonts that you think of? What are design complements that you think of? And so a craftsman who says, you know what, the audience for this piece needs to be old world. We want it to make it feel like it comes out of the 1800s. It's a story that happened in the 1800s. Well, how are we going to build that? Okay, you say, it was kind of, why did you talk about the colors and the fonts and the shapes and all that? It's because you have to know your ingredients. You have to know what's available. You have to know what those things mean. To bring them all together, and it creates one cohesive picture to support your work, your piece. If I talk about playful, carefree childhood innocence, you get a different picture in your mind. So someone approaches you and says, I want to do this children's book. It's a story that happened to me, and I want to share it with other children. And I want to have it that parents read it to their children from ages 2 to 5. Okay? What pictures come to your mind? The innocence, the carefree days. Somebody writes a doctrinal study book. I believe our brother here has a topic on that, of how to write a doctrinal work. How would you present that? Teaching and stretching a young student's mind, the casual reader to enlighten and inspire. Each one of those can generate a different style because there's a different purpose. There's an audience that you want to reach. There's people who you want to say, give me your attention because it's worthwhile. Okay, you have tremendous power in your design to do that. And yet so many times I have a deadline to meet and I got to get it done, and so that's good enough, and we ship it out the door, and such is life. A couple of things to avoid. Mixing and matching too many themes into a single publication or style. Never use more than 3 different fonts on a single page. It gets too confusing. Don't mix and match colors that clash. It gets too overbearing. Taking critiques or suggestions is personal criticism. This is a big one. Because there are designers I have worked with that the moment I opened my mouth and said, well, have you thought about that? They're like, no, wait a minute. I'm done with this. Okay, yeah, good work. You know, that's. But I thought there was a couple things you could have been. Be willing to accept criticism. The best thing you can do to take your work and make it better is let people help you make it better. And don't give criticism just because you're trying to pat yourself on the back and make them feel bad. No, be genuine. Design work is so much a part of our personality. You know, my sister can design something, and I don't even know that she did it, but I'll pick it up and say, oh, I know who this comes from. Because it has the curly cues here, and it has that type of a font. That's just her. That's the way her design comes. You know, I can pick up a book and say, well, that one comes from Rod and Staff, and that one comes from CLP, that one comes from, and you go down the list. You can kind of, publishing houses kind of get their feel. Is that a good thing? Likely it is. Is it a bad thing when we can fall into a rut? But refusing to receive feedback or allow others to help you improve is a big deal in graphic design. So be humble. Be willing to accept help. Yes, you might have spent hours and hours. But if they come along and say, that poor font just doesn't make. Okay, exactly. Overdoing the style and defeating the message of your work. This often happens to amateurs, where they love the drop shadows, and they love the bevels, and they love the little accents here and things there. And next thing you know, the whole work becomes so crowded, and this is tomorrow's topic, of white space and hierarchy, of don't defeat the message of your work by overdoing its style. And right along with that is losing clarity and consistency throughout your work. Don't change your style every time you turn the page. It wears us out. Readers need a chance to breathe. They need a chance to find a sense of continuity. We expect it to be a way. And lastly, looking for that perfect look and never satisfied. And there are times where there are artists who never let a recording go public because they spent 20 hours in the studio, and every time they listen to it, they say, it's just not good enough. And so the whole thing gets discarded because they weren't satisfied. That is a trap that we can fall into. There was a time someone told me that one of the readers at one of the publishing houses produced took over 100 hours just to design the cover. And I said, is that a sign of efficiency? I mean, is that a sign of a good cover or a sign of inefficiency? There's two sides to that. But the point I'm getting to is that don't let perfection keep you from actually reaping the benefit of producing your effort. Lastly, choosing a style to fit your purpose is much like a craftsman who crafts his trade. With careful use of many tools, supplies, and finishes, he produces the most beautiful product. As craftsmen with colors and fonts, shapes and pictures, we can build timeless styles for years of impact, inspiration, and enjoyment. And that concludes my topic. Any questions, any comments, any things that y'all would like to say? You can turn the light on.
Go ahead back there.
As you can tell, I really enjoy graphic design. I hope I didn't bore you.
It was interesting.
Thanks much.
So I guess, I mean, what time is it? Is it?
Right on.
Right on. Okay. Thank you very much. You are excused.
What was the website that you mentioned getting all the color charts from?
It's called Graphics. It's GRAF1X is how it's spelled. GRAF1X.com or .org. I forget. If you Google that, you'll find it.